Accession number 19902, Reel 2.
Mr. Wilkins, Reel 2.
The signals, so much interference from the iron ore in the hills overnight. It took us about 6 hours to get this one message through from the other side. And that was a signal for us to move over. The 25 5th Dragoons and us moved over. And that was the start of it then.
This was crossing the Mayo Range?
Yeah, the Naked Oak Pass.
What happened to you then?
Well, we lagered up, but I don't think the tank commander was very happy with the 6-pounder anti-tank guns. He didn't like us, didn't like the idea of the Japs capturing them. So when the Japs actually come across the Gopi Pass and cut off the division, we acted as infantry. We were sent up up the road to form a roadblock, and a staff officer come up all excited that no one goes back from here, you stand here. And we had to turn all the stragglers who was coming in and put them up on the hill beside us. But as fast as we was putting them up on the hill, they was coming down the other side and running off again. There was a lot of Indian non-combatant troops, you know. So in the finish, we took their weapons off of them, their automatic weapons, and kept them for ourselves. We dug in about three different positions. Because I don't think no one knew what was happening. DivHQ had been overrun, and our regimental headquarters had been overrun. And we dug in on this hill, and with the Gurkhas, and we couldn't hold it, and we was knocked off this hill. And we had to go back in again, and that's when I got wounded.
What were the Japanese attacking you with?
Well, we were shelled heavily, and they used to drag these 75mm guns right up and fire them. And I was wounded just behind the hip bone.
What wounded you?
A gunshot wound.
A splinter?
No, a shell. A bullet. A Japanese bullet, that's... officer called up to me. He took my Ven gun off of me, and he gave me a revolver and a grenade. He said, you know what you can do with it if they come for you. So my leg was dead. I tunneled into a bush, and I lay out all night. And next morning, someone grabbed my ankles and yanked me out. It was a Gurkha officer and a Gurkha. And they piggybacked me down the hill, and all the wounded was being assembled in this nullah, and the dead. And the road was cut, so they had to take us out into the box on the backs of tanks and in Ven carriers. And we got to a bend in the road, and the officer in command of this column said, the road is cut here on this corner, so all those who can walk beside the tanks walk, the rest of you duck your heads down and hope for the best. So all the tanks opened up on this hill there to keep the Japs' heads down, blazing away with machine guns, so we got through. And then, of course, we had these casualty labours on. When we got to the entrance to the box, the MP stopped us, stopped the convoy, checking that we was casualties and not. And he said, dead bodies to the right, casualties to the left. So They had these graves dug in rows, sort of thing, and the dead was just put in these waste lanes. And the seriously wounded was seen to first, naturally. So an orderly said, "Oh, you've got a field dressing on, we'll see you later." So the walking wounded was in a ward, a tarpaulin over bamboo pole sort of thing. It was all on stretchers, but that night the Japanese broke in to the through the into the defences. We heard all the screaming and all the bullets come flying through the tarpaulin, and we all jumped up, and four of us grabbed a chap on a stretcher who had his leg in plaster, and we ran out into the river, and we stood there, and then there was still stuff flying about, so we crossed the river and hid into the bush till it all died down. But it was terrible pandemonium. I think there was six doctors and five of those was killed, medical officers, and there was only one doctor left alive. And,
did the Japanese go into the ward where you were?
Well, I don't know. As I say, we ran out, but the ward across the track, one of my mates who was a casualty there, he hid under a pile of blankets. And the he had very shrapnel wounds down his back. And the Jap fired into the blankets and left him for dead. He got away with it. But then I think it was the West Yorks come in and chased him out. But
how far apart were these two wards?
Well, it's just like a road here. You know, it's a track, you know. So all the seriously wounded was in that ward, and the ones not so wounded was across. But as I say, the bullets come flying through, even in the water, you know, we could hear them whizzing into the water. And we moved back, and we saw this lad on a stretcher, and we crept into the bushes and laid out there.
So if I can just take you through it again, yeah, to get it clear. Yeah. You'd been told to form a roadblock,
yeah,
to stem this Japanese advance.
Yeah, but to stop the stragglers coming, of course, there was loads of stragglers coming through, and we had to put them in positions along the hill. But they didn't stop there, they ran down the other end of the hill and away again.
And what were you armed with, personally, at this roadblock?
Well, I had a Tommy gun then. But then I had a Bren gun, a Bren gun afterwards, but we had Tommy guns because we took them off these stragglers. As I say, poor devils, there was really Indian non-combatant troops, you know.
And how long were you at the roadblock before you were wounded?
About 2 or 3 days, I think.
Being shelled.
Shelled, and as I say, we had to dig in one position, and we'd come under every sniper fire. And the officer said to me, he said, "You're quick on your feet." He said, "Want to run from position to position? If you volunteer, young an idiot." I said, "Yes, sir." So he shouted out, "Watch for the flashes as he runs, as Wilkins runs, and open fire." So I was diving from one trench to the other one, and the snipers in the bushes up in the trees, they was opening up on the snipers. As I say, I thought it was quite exciting. I was young and stupid, like, you know.
But you didn't get hit?
No, no.
Did they get any of the snipers?
Probably did. I was more interested in diving in head first into the trench. But Then we were attacked by about 50 Zeros, Japanese planes. They bombed a machine gun, everything in sight.
So who was this officer in charge of you? Was he an artillery officer?
He was a major.
From your unit?
Yeah, Major Saul, I think his name was, yeah.
How frightening was it at this roadblock?
Well, you didn't know what was happening. The ordinary soldier don't know a thing. You're just told to do something, which you do. We dug in one position, it poured down with rain, and they come up, it was on this hill, line of trenches, they said, relieve one another, there's a hot stew down in the nullah. So, time you got down and come back with your Dixie, the stew, it was raining so hard that it was overflowing. So, you put your bush out over it to try and keep.
When you were at the roadblock, did you ever see any Japanese soldiers?
Well, we engaged. It was when we got, it was only 30 of us holding this hill till the Gurkhas moved in. There was two companies of Gurkhas moved in. And then they said that when you see the red over green very lights, it's every man to himself, fall back for the next position. And, that's how it was.
And when you were wounded, was that at night time or during the day?
Well, it was just getting dark. It was just getting dark when it was going forward, and it was a bunker on the right hand side. We thought it was clear, and this chap in front of me got hit. I got hit, and I just rolled down the hill. I hit against a tree trunk. And a couple of blokes pulled me behind this tree trunk, and this officer crawled up to me. He said, I was still holding the Bren gun. He said, I'll take your Bren gun, and he said, I'll give you my revolver and a grenade. You know what to do with it if they come out for you.
Why?
The Japs used to come out and finish off the wounded if they could, so you didn't shout or make a noise, because if they heard someone crying out in pain, they'd finish you off. I was quite surprised when someone grabbed hold of my ankles, because I thought I'd wiggled right into this bush. And
that was a Gurkha?
Gurkha officer. If it had been a Gurkha on his own, I'd have probably shot him, but because the white officer was with him.
So when the officer gave you the revolver and the grenade, did he mean for you to commit suicide?
If it had come to the worst, you'd know what to do.
Why couldn't he arrange for you to be evacuated?
Too dangerous. Too dangerous, with snipers and all that sort of thing. You couldn't move them at night,
And then, after the Gurkha officer came, you were put on...
Well, he carried me, piggybacked me, and the Gurkha steadied the officer down the hill, because it's steep hill, and we was in this nullah where all the wounded was being collected, and had wound stress and all that, and they put us on the backs of these tanks, the 25th Dragoons. I was put in a Bren carrier beside a dead body. It was a dead body on a stretcher with me.
How long were you in the Bren carrier for?
I suppose about half hour, something like that, because we had to cut through where the Japs had cut the road, sort of thing, and then we went into the box proper. There was six mediums and all sorts of artillery and tanks all lined up along the road. And when the Japs came over the hill, the whole line of six mediums and tanks opened up on this hill. Trees going up and everything.
So this is going into the admin box.
Yeah. But in the box itself, it was deadly because a small area, the Japanese didn't have to aim anything for a shell. The shell's coming in all the time.
And then once you got into the admin box, what happened to you then? Can you tell me again?
Well, as I say, old Lee checked my wound. He says, you know, you've got to see to the more serious casualties. We see to you later. Well, he took me over to, I'd had a dressing pot on my wound, and went into this ward, as we called it, and then we stayed to after the fighting was done. And I was dressed again, and I see this medical officer, who was a Scotsman. He said, "Oh, no exit wound, eh, laddie?" He says, "Never mind." He says, "You'll cough it up one of these days." And all the equipment had been destroyed. He filled my wound up with a spoon, a back handle of a spoon. He filled the wound up with some sort of powder of some sort. Give me a big injection of tetanus, and I had this big dressing on. And then every day we used to pray, walking wounded. And there's about 700 casualties in there. It's a hell of a place. And walking wounded used to pray every day. And the company commanders from the various infantry units used to come along the line and say, "Can I have this man?" And the medical officer would say, the man next to me had a big hole in his back. He said, "Well, we can't carry a pack." The officer said, "Well, can he fire a rifle? That's all I'm interested in." And that's how it used to be.
Did they try to get you back into the fighting?
Well, I was being a radio operator. Our regiment, eight close had been hit by a shell, and there was all casualties. So I went to the Gurkhas, and they carried on dressing my wound. And I was with those.
Could you walk?
Well, I limped, but, you know, the best part about it, because you can see I got the leg shortening, I got a built-up shoe. When I claimed this war pension, they said, "Why was you missing for 35 days? Well, all the records was destroyed in the medical, in the dressing station, so they had no record of me."
How long were you in the dressing station for before the Japanese attacked it?
One night.
What was the first thing that you knew about the Japanese attacking it?
Well, we heard all the screaming and the firing and all that, and all the horrible screams, terrible. That's when you feel you haven't got a personal weapon, and that's when you feel terrible, when you've got nothing to defend yourself. Everybody jumped up, and even afterwards, we used to get fusil loads of shots coming through. Everybody used to jump up, ready to run. You know, it's a terrible feeling.
So the screams were coming from the neighbouring ward?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you realise what was happening?
Oh, well, we guessed what it was. I think there was about 60 killed in that ward.
And so you left the ward. And you went where?
We ran into a river, running at the back of the tarpaulin, and we stood in there. Then we moved back into the bush because we could see the bullets splashing in the water, sort of thing. And,
did you see any Japanese?
Oh yeah.
What were they doing?
Killing, bayoneting, shooting.
You could see that happening. Mm. How many of them were there?
Oh, I couldn't say how many there was, but afterwards, the West Yorks caught them, and they knew it was this lot because they had all stuff they'd looted out of the dressing station. So they paid the price. Paid the price.
How long did it all last, the massacre?
It's tough to say, you know. It's, but they was driven out. I know they were driven out because I think it was the West Yorks that drove them out. Because in Paignton, I met that Brigadier Cree. Now, I met him in the dressing station. He said, I remember you using that hello.
So you were watching from the jungle then?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Was there any danger of them discovering you?
Well, as I say, we hid in the bush, but there was more. They smashed all the operating theater up, and as I say, they killed. One doctor pretended he was dead and smothered blood over his face, and they left him alone. And that was the only doctor who survived.
How far away were you from where they were?
300 yards, 400 yards.
Were you looking down on them or looking up towards them or what?
Well, I was looking through, I suppose, right to say. It was, afterwards, it was... There's barely any food. Someone caught three ducks and added them in, and they put them in a 40-gallon drum of water, and we all had duck soup. They just pulled the feathers out and pulled these three ducks up. We thought they were smashing.
And when you were hiding in the jungle in the river, how many people were you with?
Well, there was four of us, but there was a lot of chaps in that wall who just ran into the football jungle. One chap in the six mediums, he had up out for 3 days before he come back, but
Did you see the West Yorkshires come in?
Oh. I heard them, but when there was clearing up, we come out and then we see them, you know.
Was that in the morning?
Yeah, that's when I met, Colonel Cree. He's a brigadier now, or he was, you know. But it was all the time we collected shorts and overs from both sides. In other words, we were in the middle of the war. The Japanese one side, our blokes the other side, and we was getting bullets and shells coming in. And these poor Indians, they used to one end of the nullah to the other end, you know. As soon as the shell landed here, they'd all run down that end. The shell would land that end, they'd run back. And all the mules, there's a... The mule sender, poor old mules, you know, running about with great big lumps off of them and all that.
So after this Japanese massacre, what happened to you then?
Well, I had, as I say, I had my wound properly dressed then, and I was all taped up. And young fellow with me out of Somerset's, his arm had turned poisonous. And I said, you go show it. I said, it's turned septic. So he went up and he was the one who helped me with the stretcher, you know, four of us picked up. He'd been cut by machine gun bullets, you know.
What stretcher was this?
Well, with this fellow who was on, you know, the wounded chap we picked up.
To take him out of the massacre, you mean?
Yeah. Mm. Mm.
So, what happened to you after the massacre then?
Well, as I say, I was in there 8 days altogether in the dressing station, and I wasn't sorry to get out because you're unarmed, and it's dangerous, you know, so I was quite ready to go.
Where did you go to?
Well, as I say, I went to the Gurkhas, the 8th Gurkhas, their medical corps had done dressings and that. And then when the division was relieved, our Colonel Cole of the 24th Anti-Tank, he got the DSO there. He sent all the wounded to a place called Elephant Point, and we convalescing there, all the wounded, from our arrangement.
Where was this place where you were convalescing?
I think it was called Elephant Point. I always remember this because Fury Lynn come down to entertain the troops, and I couldn't go in the water because I had this plaster right across my backside. And someone said, oh, it's a dame. When we never see women, sort of thing. So I didn't believe. And I turned around, and there was Vera Lynn with her fearless in this jeep. And I didn't know what to do then.
Well, is Elephant Point in the Arakan?
Yeah, on the Arakan. Yeah, it's on the coast. It's I believe it's where once a year they round the wild elephants up. They, for some unknown reason, they come down. And the locals round them up, the Arakanese.
What was it like in the convalescence place?
Well, it was we had convalescent rations, which consisted of a biscuit, a digestive biscuit, and a glass of milk.
So you were hungry?
Well, we'd been on. When we were supplied by airdrop in the Arakan, and you had to take what you could live on. We had a sack of porridge. We lived on porridge for about 5 days. And as I say, the troops, the fighting units, sent back some of their cigarette rations to the wounded. And the commander of the dressing station, Field Emmers, or whatever you call it, come around and said, are you lads getting your cigarette ration? And everybody said, what ration? And evidently, these two chaps who were supposed to be sharing them out to a man had kept them. So I think it was a colonel, come back and said, you'll be interested to know that I've posted these two miserable men to the infantry so they can get a taste of what it's like.
Did you make a full recovery from the wound?
Well, I was, as I say, on my war pension thing, and they wanted to know why I was missing for 35 days, but I couldn't understand that because after convalescence, Coima started and 7th Div went up to Coima. So I was in transit, so why they said I was missing, I don't know, because on my pension papers it says 35 days, a question mark, and they didn't know what had happened to me.
So you were in transit where to?
To go up to Coima for the fighting in Coima.
Did you take part in the fighting at Coima?
No, I didn't, because as I say, I didn't get up there, but our division was up there, and we pushed right up to Infal.
So where did you go to after Elephant Point?
Well, various transit camps. As I say, I don't know where they was. We were just shoved from Philadelphia.